This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looked like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we aren't successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
You ready to make to come to the microphone so he'll listen up?
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
The Real Deal.
Thank you, Jim. I'm really excited to be here.
And tell me, how did you first become interested in Sandy Hook?
Well, you know, my story is actually kind of a personal story. It goes back to 2009, before Sandy Hook even happened. And it was something that happened with my son. He had been involved in an alleged crime where he was blamed for something he didn't do. And it set me on this path of, you know, why would people do this? Why are people covering this up? Why would the police lie? Why would a state senator do this? You know, why would the prosecutor go along with it? Why would they lie and all these things? And ultimately it led me to Sandy Hook. And it turns out the senator whose grandson really did the crime is the senator who wrote the new long gun bill and the new mental health bill for Sandy Hook.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
So I was sitting there one day and I had watched Wolfgang. Actually, I'm kind of late coming on to the scene, to be honest with you. It wasn't maybe until April of this year that I even began to really look at it. And it was my father, who is an engineer, and he's a former IBMer, who had said to me that he had joined a group of engineers that were looking into 9/11, and that he knew that steel didn't melt with kerosene, and Building 7 was never hit by a plane, and that just didn't make sense. And I was like, really? Wow, I didn't even know about that. And then all of a sudden, when I was looking at those videos, I saw something about Boston, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And then I saw something about Sandy Hook. And then when I realized that that's why all these people had been behaving the way they were, it all made sense. And I sat there and I was like, should I call Wolf? Because if I do, I'm jumping in with both feet. I picked up the phone, I called him, and here I am today.
That's wonderful, 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 Scott. And I love your first photograph. Let's begin looking at some of your slides and tell us your story.
Okay. So, yeah, Wolf was about to come up for the first FOIA hearing. And so I chased him around and I got myself to the hearing. And this is after the second hearing. We were feeling elated. We had a good second hearing in particular.
Was that the one where Patricia LaLorda admitted that
yes,
it was DHS that put this everyone must check in sign in place?
Absolutely.
That was a sensational development.
Yes. And so that was that day. And well, as you know, the third hearing was very frustrating to watch these people lie. But let's take a look and
Yeah, let's go through your whole set. Just advance it, Scott, as you want. Yeah.
Okay, so I had no intentions of filming this thing. Okay, I'm by no means a photographer. I was by no means even a YouTube videographer or anything. And there was an open spot on the other side of the table. All the cameras were set up behind these guys. And you've got Detective Michael, or Chief Michael Kehoe, And then you have Monty Frank, the attorney, the bald-headed, strange-looking guy there.
That's Monty Frank.
Yeah.
He is very odd-looking, yes. Go on.
Okay. And Chief Kehoe, he had to look right at me when Attorney Kay Wilson was asking the questions. And you can see him. He's staring right at me. And so I got some very good video, which is what I put up, and it got me going on YouTube. And now I've got over 400,000 views in just a few months. So anyway.
Scott, we'll see if we can hype that number, okay?
Okay.
I think it's fantastic you were there. And I'm looking forward to everything you have to tell us about all of this, wherever you want to begin.
And I wanted to say congratulations on the book. And the video that you did about the book was fantastic.
Oh, terrific, and Scott.
So
my introduction. Let me just mention to everyone, if they don't know, of course, it was on our last show, I think, the first hour. But they can go to Nobody Died at Sandy Hook online, and it's like the third item down, my video introduction to Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. I'm really glad you had a chance to see it, Scott.
Yeah, and you added some new elements that I hadn't seen, in particular that one photograph where it was early morning before the sun came up.
Yes.
That's fantastic. So.
Yes, and I'm sure you haven't seen the other two photographs, the pairs of the pink poles sticking out of the windows, the holes in the windows, and then the perps actually drilling the holes.
No, I had not.
And of course, looking at the perps through the plate glass window in the front before it's been shot out.
Unbelievable.
It's absolutely unbelievable.
You know what else is unbelievable is that I live in Connecticut, and people here are oblivious to the fact that this did not happen at all like it was portrayed. And I've wondered why. And I've actually done some surveys of people just to try to find out why. And what I've come to realize is that we've had 9/11, which is an hour and a half from me, Boston, an hour and a half from me, Sandy Hook, an hour from me. So we've all been very traumatized by these events being very close to us, you know? And so I think people that were more removed and were maybe somewhere else in the country, you know, didn't feel quite the personal part of it, because everyone seemed to know somebody who knew someone who worked with someone, you know, for all these events. Okay. So it's become a bit of a very sore subject. You don't want to bring it up. People have been personally affected. So it's a strange phenomenon. You would think people here would be more in tune, but it's exactly the opposite.
You're not running across people who reside in Connecticut who are aware that it was a monstrous hoax.
There's not many. In fact, the people that I talk to about it, most people don't believe it, which is, you know, it's frustrating.
And of course, Boston was the most amateurish false flag ever. I mean, it was unbelievable.
It is.
I don't know if you've seen it, but I have a summary about it online, the Real Deal Must See Boston Marathon Update, which anyone who's unfamiliar with the Boston situation ought to ponder, because it's all there in short order.
No, Jim, I've been watching all your work. So.
Oh, Scott, that's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. So
this money, Frank.
Anyway,
Scott, Monty Frank seems something of a hired gun. Can you tell us your impressions of him?
This guy is something else. He lives in Newtown. He represents the Board of Education, the Newtown Police, and town of Newtown. He has this team
champs. Is there anything we can do about the audio,
which is a bike riding group. They all wear their gown and some gun out.
Keep going, Scott.
Okay. So he's promoting his agenda, which to me is a serious conflict of interest, to be raising money and yet he's representing the town and the police and all these other people. So it's a very strange situation. I've never seen anything quite like it, to be honest. And but what's interesting about this photograph is look how red the chief of police's face is. I mean, if that isn't the look of guilt, I don't know what is.
Yes, an expression of embarrassment.
Absolute embarrassment. And, you know, my feeling is that at one time he was probably a good man. And something happened that he became compromised. And I know that because of one of the other people that was at the hearing, he used to be an Eagle Scout, or he was in Eagle Scouts with this chief's son. You know, so they did have some, you know, some level of decency, I suppose, assuming the Boy Scouts are on the up and up. But and we know they're not, I guess. But I don't know.
Scott, were you able to exonerate your son? Was he exonerated when it was the chief's son who had done it?
No. It was one of these things where he had to plead guilty. You know, there was no other choice for him. There was no bail. He was a juvenile. He was 13 years old. So they took my son. They put him in jail with four other boys. No bail. First, he had to face the adult court, and they set up a bail of $120,000. But then they kept one of the charges in juvenile because in juvenile they can hold the kids. All right. So my rights, his rights were just violated left and right. And we got everything moved back to juvenile. And then by the time that happened, we were glad to plead guilty to a misdemeanor and, you know, get him on probation. But the problem is that now he's being sued by this girl and this family, whose last name ends with Steen, has sued 21 defendants plus the school district, and it's unbelievable. They just trashed us so bad on television, on the newspapers. Every time we had a hearing, it was on the front page, and now they're claiming that, you know, this is the cause of her trauma. So
I'm so sorry to hear. This is a miserable state of justice in the United States and law enforcement, which, of course, is epitomized by Sandy Hook.
It is. And I've been very outspoken. I've gone on television a number of times speaking out against the juvenile justice system and just the whole process. And it was crazy because – and my attorneys were like, no, you don't want to fight. You want to be nice. You don't want to upset the prosecutor. And I mean,
Scott, you were being sold down the river by your attorney.
Everybody was. And, you know, when you hear things like the kids belong to the state, well, I'm a prime example of exactly that. They feel like they own your kids and they can take them from you. And, you know, there's no jury for juveniles. There's one judge that would make a decision, and you know, everybody's in cahoots. So you have to plead guilty to get on probation. I mean, you would never go up against one judge who's going to make a decision.
If he pled not guilty, he would have been found guilty, and it would have been more stringent.
Oh, he'd still be in jail. So it's
The depravity of the American system of justice is appalling.
And, you know, I had contacted the FBI thinking that they were honest.
Yeah.
I told them about this. And they said, after they met with me, they called me an hour later and said, get me everything you've got on this particular senator. And so I did. I got them everything. And then they called me again. They came back and got more stuff. And now I realize they just wanted to know what I knew.
Yeah.
Which
that's
right. helped me.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's exactly right.
So anyway, but
Scott, I think I'm going to have you back to talk about this in greater detail. Let's go forward with Sandy Hook. But I appreciate your motivation. I think being charged, you know, held responsible for something you did not do is among the most difficult psychologically events of a lifetime. I have been in that situation myself, and I understand the acute pain and sense of frustration and you know, agony that it induces. It's completely wrong.
Thank you. And the emotional damage that this has caused is unfathomable. It still goes on. We're still doing depositions. And, you know, I mean, it's, I don't know. But anyway, we're here to talk about Sandy Hook today.
Right.
You know, unfortunately, sometimes it takes a painful experience to get people to do things.
Yes.
There's no way I'd be doing this if I hadn't been through this experience. So.
Yeah, understood.
You know,
go for it.
When you, you know,
I think your observations about Monty Frank and his conflicts of interest are fascinating.
Yeah, they're quite obvious, especially during the hearing, watching him object to every single question, you know, and it just it was ridiculous. Anyway,
who was presiding?
He's not even a judge. we'll go into him later.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, so now you had talked about this iconic photograph.
No, this is the second one. This isn't the iconic photograph. This is the second one, Scott.
Okay. So, well, this is the photograph of the parents watching the
show. Yeah. And, of course, this is cropped, so there are half a dozen parents there, and you're only showing the two, where I initially thought this woman in the purple jacket was Shannon Hicks, but she wrote to William Shanley and explained, no, that she took this photograph just as she had taken the other one, and that she'd taken them both on the 14th of December, which, of course, is completely ridiculous.
So do you know who that woman is?
No, but I see you have several about her, so go for it.
Let me tell you about her.
Okay.
All right. Well, she belongs to these two children, and these two kids, their last name is Terrafay. And this woman is Lisa Terrafay. And the Terrafays, their father used to be a police officer in the Fairfield Police Department. We're going to talk a lot about Fairfield because Fairfield plays a big part in this whole thing.
Good.
So this is the Terrafay family. Now, when I found out about the Terrafays,
can you spell that last name?
T-E-R-I-F-A-Y.
T-E-R-I-F-A-Y?
Yes, Terrafay. Okay.
Go ahead.
I found that the father, who was a former police officer in Fairfield, whose name is Al Allen Terrafay, he was living down in Florida. And, well, he had been very outspoken. He went on television. He talked about his experience with his son and his daughter-in-law and his grandchildren being up there and how they were going to deal with trying to comfort them in this time. And, well, after I saw that, then I came across his obituary. And now, you know, I recognize that people do die. But we've had an awful lot of suspicious deaths. People
yes.
that were involved in Sandy Hook in one way or another. And so I don't know, okay, but I certainly have a question about this death because
whether it was a real death or whether it was by non-natural causes?
Any of the above, okay? I mean, you know, he is a decorated U.S. Navy reservist. He was on the USS McGowan destroyer. So I assume that he had a fairly, he thought it really happened. And then when he found out that it wasn't exactly the way it was being portrayed, he might have been upset about that and had to be quieted down. I don't know, but I would say that that's certainly worthy of looking into or questioning.
Yeah.
Now, living in Connecticut, what a lot of people don't understand is that this is one of the wealthiest places in the world. Okay. Fairfield County is one of the wealthiest places in the world. And these are the suburbs of New York City. And so when you talk about a Vanguard school in Fairfield County, it should be the creme de la creme. All right. But no, we've got this. Doorknobs drilled out. We've got name tags on the doors that are done with a little label maker. I mean, come on. This is unfathomable.
Now, what school are you talking about here?
Sandy Hook. These are
This is from Sandy Hook.
Newtown.
You're telling me Newtown is in Fairfield County. That's what I didn't understand. Yeah.
I'm sorry. You know, I live here, so some of the stuff I tend to
take for granted. Sure.
Yeah. So, yes.
Well, look how you got a Myers moving sticker right there on number four.
Yeah, I noticed that. I just noticed that.
They were the firm that helped to refurbish the school to set it up as a stage.
Yeah, that's what I found out. So, but, I mean, you can see where they've peeled off whatever stickers may have been there back in the early 90s or something. And, and then put these things on there. I mean, it's
ridiculous.
Just never happened.
It's so amateurish.
It is. It's sloppy on purpose. That's what I call it. And that's when you talk about a psyop. Okay, it's kind of like they wanted us to argue about this stuff, and they've done a good job because it has divided people.
Yeah, except now we've blown it apart for anyone who looks at the evidence.
This is true. But if you look at the agenda of the New World Order or whatever you want to call these people, they are trying to create conflict. They're trying to create controversy. And that they're doing it with the black versus the white versus the black, all these fake shootings and all that. So, and I know in my own household, my talking about it and being somewhat consumed by it, has caused a lot of strain on the family, and so I've had to learn better boundaries with it.
Could you ask them to look at that 1 hour introduction to the book? Could you just ask them to look at that and then say, I'll never mention it to you again. You look at this, you watch this, you tell me what you think, and I'll never mention it again.
They just still think I should be doing something else.
Scott, could you try that?
I could try.
Try it.
All right. Now, I know you said the name of the book is No One Died at Sandy Hook.
Right.
And I believe that's true, that no children died at Sandy Hook.
Well, I don't think any adults died either.
Well, there's one piece of this that I have questions about. And
tell me.
It has to do with the Trent Acostas. Trent Acosta he's on the Federal Reserve Board of Directors. And this is the morning of the event. And the house on the left is Nancy Lanza's.
Ostensibly, yeah.
The house in the middle is Trent Acosta.
Right.
All the cars are parked in front of Trent Acosta.
Right.
Why?
Good question.
Now, here are the tire marks. And I got to give credit here to Tyranny News Network that did this. So they outlined where all the tire marks were from the various cars that were there. So there was quite a few cars there.
Now, is this this is Trent Acosta's driveway?
Yeah. And now here's another shot of Trent Acosta's, and you can see that silver Suburban.
Yeah.
And then there's a vehicle in front of it that is, it's one of those vehicles that we see later at Sandy Hook. And so it looks like something happened there. And I say that because of all the cars parking on the lawn and things like that. Yeah. And
well, Scott, just to be very clear, when I say no one died at Sandy Hook, I mean none of the 20 children who allegedly died at the school, or the six adults who allegedly died at the school, or the mother, Nancy Lanza, or Adam Lanza. Now, if there's somebody else somewhere in Sandy Hook who may have died, that's a whole nother matter. But, you know, that's what you're raising here.
Yeah. And it occurred to me today that, you know, Monty Frank told some of the witnesses not to show up.
Yes.
At the FOIA hearings. And it made me wonder if maybe somebody couldn't show up. I just raised some questions.
Good.
There's some missing witnesses, as you probably well know. A lot of them, actually. And so when Wolf and I were sitting after the hearing, and that photograph of the two of us sitting there talking, it was actually just moments after this, he said, boy, you know, I really wish I could figure out who those kids were that went to the Super Bowl. And I looked at him and I said, you mean you don't know, we don't know who those kids were? Like, why wouldn't we? Okay. You got to realize I came onto the scene kind of late. So
Sure.
So I really didn't know, you know, that.
Sure.
So I said, well, let me think about that for a second. And, you know, because I grew up right next door to Newtown. I grew up in Ridgefield. And so what immediately came to mind when he told me that they were very good singers is that I had gone to a concert. The old high school in Ridgefield was converted into the Ridgefield Playhouse. And the Ridgefield High School, the old Ridgefield High School gym, was the very first place I ever went to when I was 12 years old. We had baseball tryouts in the old high school gym. This place was converted into the playhouse. My wife and I went to a concert there. We watched John Anderson, who's the lead singer from Yes, play with these children from the School of Rock. And these kids were incredible. I mean, I felt like I was at a Yes concert. I mean, they were amazing musicians. So I said, I wonder if it might be the School of Rock. Maybe those kids go to the School of Rock. Where is the School of Rock? I don't even know. So I looked up some of the locations. And when I did, I wanted to see how far away they were. And what I found is that there's a School of Rock in Fairfield, Connecticut, which is about, it's about 20 minutes away from Newtown, let's say. And there's one in New Bedford, New York, and there's also one in New Canaan, Connecticut. Now, Newtown and that area is very close to the New York state border. So New Bedford, New York is maybe 30 minutes away, let's say. New Canaan, maybe a half an hour also. And when I looked into this, I started to see in some of the videos the same kids who were at the Super Bowl that went to these three schools of rock. And I was like, that's it. I know it. And so I decided I would make a little visit over there. And I went to the School of Rock on a Sunday night, about an hour from my house. And I went into the subway to get a sandwich next door, and I could hear the kids playing over here. It's Sunday night around 7:30, and the place is kind of, it's like the windows are blacked out and stuff like that. I think you can kind of see that on the right side there's the windows. You can't see in there. And so I asked the gal in there, I said, so do these kids play all the time or whatever? He's like, yeah, they're in there playing all the time. She said, they come over here every day for lunch. And I'm like, well, don't they go to school? Now, because this was in May, let's say. And she said, you know, I've been wondering the same thing. Like, I don't know why they're over here, like, not, and they're not in school. I'm like, that's kind of weird. And so I went home, and well, not before driving around and taking note of license plates and things like that. And when I got home, I ran some of those, and they all tied back to Newtown, which I thought was interesting. And I began to rather meticulously go through the videos that were posted from the School of Rock and tried to capture various photographs of some of the people that I thought looked like some of the people that were used. And one of their main photographs was was this one. And so there's one individual on there that really popped out. And is there anybody on there that stands out for you?
Well, I'm fascinated by your studies. This is an aspect of studying the photographs on which I've spent less effort than other aspects. So you go for it.
Well, take a look at the keyboardist over there. Does he look like anybody you've ever seen?
On the far right?
Yeah. All right, I'll give you a hint.
Well, it's not. He doesn't look like Adam Lanza, does he?
Yes, he does. And now there's this other picture of Adam Lanza where he's got this bowl haircut. And what I realize is that what they've done, you know, and I know you've said it, that they created a fictional character. Okay?
Yeah.
And it's my belief that they used several people from the School of Rock to create one Adam Lanza. And here's this kid from the School of Rock. He's got that funny haircut. And so that's, this up here is another one of the photographs that I got.
Yeah, these are strange, fascinating.
Yeah. So you got this kid over here, Danny, I think his name is. And then I found these pictures. And this is a gentleman by the name of Daniel Benin. And he's a School of Rock all-star. And these are pictures of him. Well, one, I guess, is his senior prom or junior prom. And another one, he's playing at a concert. And the similarity to Adam Lanza is undeniable. And when you look at the picture of the keyboardist there, with the long arms and the long fingers, I mean, most people would agree. And there's so many connections to the School of Rock that it becomes obvious, you know, to someone like me, because it just goes on and on and on. Now, what I also was doing was going through all the videos of Sandy Hook. And I came across this picture in the upper right here. You guys can see my mouse, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And Michael Moore was right there the whole time. And as many people know, excuse me?
I don't think that's Michael Moore, but you go right ahead.
Oh, you don't? Okay. All right.
Well, I don't think Michael Moore would do anything like this, but I also don't think that looks like Michael Moore. I mean, there's a vague resemblance, but you can find a vague resemblance. It's a different type of glasses. The jaw is not the same. I dare say the ears don't look the same. The hair doesn't look the same. So I do not believe this is Michael Moore, but I'm interested that you have that impression. So go forward.
Okay. And, you know, and that is something that I've learned through all this, is that you know, facial recognition.
Now, the photo identification, Scott, is unbelievably tricky. I learned that the hard way.
Yeah. And and I've also learned that this is a CIA psyop, and they've done a lot of manipulation of the photographs.
Right.
And they've used several people for each person, and just to make it that much more confusing. So
yeah.
In other words, they, you know, they may have like three younger pictures, and it's really three different kids, for example. So anyway, it's a little.
I believe the left, the bottom, and the bottom right are all Michael Moore, but the top right is not.
Okay, fair enough. Now this individual is Gino Faiella. He's he's in charge of maintenance. Okay. So he's
a supervisor, the custodial supervisor, something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He oversees the operation.
He the one who acknowledged that the last security update was in 2007?
Correct.
Yeah.
And, you know, what was interesting to hear at that hearing was when Wolfgang's attorney, Kay Wilson, brought out the evidence that said it was widely reported that the security system
been upgraded in 2012 or 2011. Yes,
correct. And Streeter, that's the guy's name. He said that's you can't use news media. It's not considered credible evidence. And everyone was like, "What?" I mean, it was so widely reported, and this is, as you know, well, just shortly after Obama had repealed the propaganda ban. So
right. And the NDAA for 2013, the Smith-Mundt Act was nullified.
Exactly. So, you know, to have heard all this on all these news stations and everything, for the judge to say, well, not even a judge, for the mediator to say that it's not admissible as evidence, it's not considered a credible source.
Look at the impeccable point he's making about all the publicity about Sandy Hook, which was in the media.
Exactly.
For him to say that, we need to take it to heart. He's absolutely right, because it was all rubbish.
Are you talking about Lieutenant Vance? That you're only
talking about the whole spiel. Everything we've been told about Sandy Hook by the mass media has been complete rubbish. They were massively complicit in this.
Yes. So this is Gino, and he's turning red. Once again, the embarrassment, the shame, the guilt. And he's being shown photographs of mold and mildew and broken concrete and pavement and call before you dig signs.
Does he admit the school had been abandoned by 2008?
No, of course not. And there's a...
But he has to know. I mean, you're giving him proof right before his nose.
Oh, yeah, of course he does. And there's a 4-inch water line all the way around the inside of the school because it had been flooded during the tropical storm Irene. And it was obviously...
Never refurbished.
No, it was obviously abandoned. And again, we're talking a Vanguard school in one of the wealthiest communities in the world. Okay? So to have a 4-inch mold line going around the tile all the way through the school is just something that would never, ever happen.
Right. No principal would tolerate it. No upscale community like Sandy Hook would allow it.
Of course not. And, you know, if guys like Monty Frank are living in Newtown and some other very influential politicians and members of General Electric, like GE Capital, are all living in this community. I mean, this is a very upscale place. So he's looking at this type of stuff, you know, this mold. And I mean, it's just so ridiculous.
Rotting door frame, I love it.
Yeah. So, and then this is the entrance to the school.
I know, it stinks. It's just disgusting.
No, I'm not even looking at the stains. That is disgusting, though. But you got to remember, this is Christmas time, okay?
Right.
And what are we looking at here? We're looking at demonic pictures.
I mean, over there on the right.
Well, on the right.
In the display area, yeah, masks and all that.
Yeah, and I mean, someone could say, oh, well, it's a, you know, it's an African display or something like that. Well, maybe so, but it's Christmas time. Okay?
Right. This is a kindergarten to fourth grade school. They ought to be decorations for Christmas and Hanukkah all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at these. I mean, these are scary. Like, you don't put these things out for small children.
Okay? Yeah. Just don't.
In fact, I took a trip overseas, and I brought home some masks, and my wife would not let me hang them up because they were just evil looking.
You know?
I mean, she's like, I don't want those in our home. Like, so, all right. So back to the hearing. And this is where he's having to admit that the last time an inspection was done was in 2012. And the gallon of lead.
Wait a minute. 2011, you mean?
I'm sorry, 2011.
But I mean, that's got to be fabricated already there. They haven't done an inspection since 2008.
Right, and she's asking, where's the one for 2012? I mean, you don't start a school year without having an inspection report done.
Right.
If you'll note the gallon red, she's actually an attorney, Attorney Brown. And so the other gentleman there on the left, Streeter, he'll ask her questions. And, she makes sure that he's not going to break the law or whatever. And the look on her face at about this point in the hearings is disbelief. And she starts to, there's like a shift in energy where she suddenly becomes interested. And I think that this is, a very interesting photograph because this is about the turning point where she realizes, like, oh my God, this school was not open. There's no way this thing was operating.
Attorney Brown.
Yeah. And the mediator Streeter, he starts turning beet red also. So, he's embarrassed. And I mean, there's some very strange emotions. And then you've got Monty Frank over there. He's always got his hand on his face.
Yeah.
And, and the guy behind him, who's his helper, he's always got this very strange look.
Are you talking about the tall, bald guy standing or the guy straight between the cameras?
Oh, you can't see him right now, actually. He's
okay. Oh, I see he's right behind him. I see his head right behind Monty Frank's head.
Yeah. But just on kind of a side note, it's interesting what comments that people put, and they said, oh, yeah, Monty Frank, he's a hand sniffer. And I said, a hand sniffer? What the heck is that? And the guy says, he goes, look it up. It's a real thing. People, have this obsession with sniffing their hands. And if you look, he's got his hand on his face. It's like it brings him back to, like his childhood.
Some sucking, pacifiers.
Yeah, something really bizarre and weird like that. And
it's a psychological condition.
Yes. All right. So we are...
So you're telling me that Brown started to realize that this whole thing was a scam?
Absolutely.
Did she start changing her questions, demeanor, attitude?
She did. Yep. And
that's fascinating. Heretofore, she just assumed the official story was right. But Kay dug just deep enough for her to realize it was all a scam.
Yeah, and... it's kind of like when people first realize or find out that our government actually did this to us. It's such a level of betrayal that we feel that it's shocking. And that's what she's experiencing in this photograph right here.
Yeah, fascinating.
All right. So, and I just took a few of these.
Yeah, I got it.
Shots from, you know, from my video. I got a great video. It was my cell phone, and it came out really high.
Have you put it up anywhere? Have you run it anywhere?
Oh, yeah. Just go to my site.
I mean, is it on YouTube?
It's on Crisis, under Crisis Actor, all these videos. Yep.
Your website is crisisactor.com?
No, it's actually my YouTube channel. Crisis Actor is the name.
Crisis, is that two words?
Crisis Actor. Well, you
two
know, they use Crisis Actors.
Yeah, I know, Scott. I'm asking about the name. Is it Crisis Actor, two words?
Two words, yes, yes, yes.
Crisis Actor on YouTube.
Correct.
If we put up Crisis Actor, comma, YouTube, we'd get it.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Some people tease me about, you know, calling it Crisis Actor, but I thought it was kind of a reverse psyop on these people. You know.
Well, in Boston, there was nothing but. These were amputee crisis actors in Boston. It was unbelievable, Scott.
Yeah. Okay, so take a look at Gino here. And then I was going through some video. I saw this fireman on the right-hand side.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's Gino. What, he's a fireman too?
Go back.
I'll go forward. So.
Okay, good. Yeah. That does look like him. Is that him? Did he admit it?
Well, no. Nobody's asked him yet. And
unbelievable.
I told Wolf, but you have to understand there's so many things that they were doing, you know.
I know.
And so I checked to see if he was a volunteer fireman by chance. Okay. And of course he's not. So yeah, I think this to me is a very incriminating picture.
Yes.
It needs to be answered. And he's got one of those halyards on here too.
Yeah.
Okay, so he must have checked in, you know?
Yep.
Okay.
And that, of course, would be from the 13th, where when they were doing the rehearsal, the drill.
I can't say for sure which day this would have been, but it could have been either or. It could have been, yeah.
Keep going.
Okay. All right. Then we go back to the police chief, and you can see he is beat red at this point. Now, prior to this, the question was, can you please tell me what the call incident report says? And he reads it after pausing for a very long minute, and he says, a medium priority. And Kay Wilson says, excuse me? This is the biggest school shooting in America, elementary school shooting, and it's labeled a medium priority for an unwanted person? I thought it was a 911 call that said shots fired. And of course, Monty Frank was objecting all over the place. And, but can you imagine, you know, I mean, the most horrific school shooting, so we think, and it's labeled a medium priority for an unwanted person? Just.
Right. That's right.
Doesn't make any sense. Now, in this picture, he's being questioned about State Trooper 1, which is the Connecticut helicopter. And the state police helicopter. Now, the moment that shots are fired anywhere, that helicopter is in the air. And he's being asked, are there any communications with Trooper 1? And he answers the question that, to the best of his knowledge, there were no communications with Trooper 1. Now, can you imagine the biggest school shooting and having no communications?
It makes no sense if it was real, Scott, which is the point. this is what you might expect if it were just a drill, if it were just a charade, if it were something phony. It would be low priority, medium priority. You wouldn't want to call the helicopter. They might have serious business to take care of.
Exactly. So, you know, he's bright red, and the tension in the room, I mean, he was so uncomfortable, it made me feel uncomfortable, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Everybody in the room was very tense and feeling very, you know, angry, embarrassed, just in disbelief.
Was the room stacked with people who were supporters of the official account?
Not like I would have hoped. And
Wait a minute. I said, was it stacked with people who were supporters of the official account?
Nobody was there. Nobody. And, you know, why wasn't the media there from our local?
Who are all these people we see in the background?
These are all alternative media people. You got InfoWars, Caravan at Midnight, I don't know, a few others. I don't recall all of them.
Okay. But they were all alternative media. I'm surprised they even let them in.
The alternative media?
Yeah.
Why?
I'm surprised they even let them in.
I know. Why?
Why? Because it's, you know, it's got the potential to expose the whole thing being a hoax.
Oh. Well, it's a public hearing, so.
Well, that was it. It was a public hearing, so they couldn't keep them out.
Yeah. And that was, I believe, the strategy was to be able to ask these kinds of questions, because if Wolf had gone through the normal litigation process through the Superior Court, you know, he wouldn't have a chance to do this for a long, long time. It would take many, many years before there would have been a deposition of any kind. So,
Scott, we need to take a break. Is this a good point?
Oh, sure. Sure.
Okay. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, with my special guest, Scott Wilson, who's shedding light on some dark corners of Sandy Hook. After this break, we'll be right back.
We can now say, with moral certainty and considerable scientific authority, that the death of JFK was committed by a meticulously executed conspiracy which was obscured by an extensive cover-up. Murder in Dealey Plaza, edited by James Fetzer, goes to the heart of the JFK assassination. You'll read new and up-to-date information regarding the Secret Service, the Lincoln limousine, the medical evidence, the cover-up, altering the film, framing the patsy, and the silent historians. Also, 16 smoking guns, each one crushing the government's lone assassin scenario. A world-class chronology of November 22nd, 1963. Chapters by David W. Mantic, Gary Aguilar, Vincent Palomara, Douglas Weldon, Jack White, Ira David Wood III, James H. Fetzer, Doug Horn, and a classic essay by Bertrand Russell. The complete story in the pages of one single book, edited by James H. Fetzer. Read it now. Read it again. You'll use it as a reference. Murder in Dealey Plaza. Available at Amazon.com and major bookstores around the world. It's murder.
Less than 3% of you people read books, because less than 15% of you read newspapers. Right now, there is a whole, an entire generation that never knew anything that didn't come out of this tube. This tube can make or break presidents, popes, prime ministers. Television is not the truth. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We deal in illusions, man. None of it is true. But you people sit there day after day, night after night, all ages, colors, creeds.
Broadcasting live on network radio.
So turn off your television sets, turn them off now, turn them off and leave them off.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade.
It looks like one of those scenes of an old building being purposely dynamited and blown.
When we are successful,
I'm just a patsy.
And we will be.
You ready to make to come to the microphone, so we'll listen up.
A new world order.
So my name's Robbie Parker.
It might have appeared that way, but from my close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon.
Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th.
President Kennedy died at 1 p.m.
Live from the Media Broadcasting Center.
All right, so here we are back at the FOIA hearing, and the police chief has just admitted that there was no communications with the helicopters, which is just incredible. And, you know, just to talk more about that, there were no trauma helicopters called either. And I believe it was Wolf who called the, let's see, it's called Sky something or other here. And asked if anybody had called for helicopters, and no helicopters had ever been contacted or called or requested for Sandy Hook, which is absolutely remarkable.
I'm back.
Hello, Jim. And
you're doing a great job, Scott.
Thank you. And we're live. And so the fact that they never called any helicopters, and the people that were working there were waiting for the call because they had heard the scanner and that sort of thing, but they never called for helicopters. So that was a very, very indicative anomaly. Okay, so I'm going to go on to the next photograph. And a lot of the things that I found are anomalies. And there's so many anomalies. I wish one of them was like, you know, the absolute smoking gun that just would put the whole thing away.
Scott, we've got the absolute smoking gun in those 50 photographs of the home and the 50 photographs of the school. You don't have to worry. You don't bear that burden.
Okay. Thank you. So, yeah, the psychological operation here is so
The beauty of having already proven that it's a scam, because we have that early morning photograph, for example, where you're looking at the SWAT team already there. The crime scene tape is already there. The windows are not blown out. There's no blast in the front door. Wayne Carver is staying there with his arms folded, waiting for the portable mortuary tent to show up. That proves it's a scam all by itself.
You know,
and then we've got the perps drilling the holes in the window to fake the shooting. And we have the perps inside the lobby, and you're looking right through the glass plate that Adam Lanza would have shot out, and it's not shot out. Those are smoking guns, Scott. And the fact is, we know the whole thing was a scam. So all the points you're making now, you know dead sure that it was based on a scam. These are all faking. They're all phonies. They're all frauds.
You are absolutely correct, and that's what I found when I watched your video and I saw that picture. That you're absolutely right. That is the smoking gun. Okay.
All three, there are actually five photographs, you know, in the video introduction. Now, in the prologue, which I published on my blog, only one of them, only the early morning photograph. But did you see with the three pink rods sticking out of the bullet hole, you know, the holes to show they were at perfect 90 degrees and then the perps drilling the holes?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's actually altogether five photographs there that sealed the deal, that make it, prove it, it's a total scam.
And wasn't the, the aluminum from the window, wasn't it, like, going the wrong way or something?
Yeah, sure, it was peeled out inside into the room. And it would be the opposite if the bullets had been fired from the inside out. It's all so unbelievably, grotesquely fake and phony, Scott.
Yeah. And
I love what you're doing here, because you're bringing out different aspects where once we know that it's a complete scam, you realize how many people are willing to put their integrity on the line and lie.
Yeah, absolutely. And
I mean, here are three examples right here.
Now, the guy on the right is Mr. Sherlock, okay? Now, I don't know about you, but he just looks phony to me. He looks like he's wearing a mask. I just had this weird feeling about this guy.
Well, see, he's not maybe a very practiced actor, and he's trying to ask himself, how should I look? I want to look solemn. I want to look concerned. I want to look like I lost a loved one. But he doesn't know how to do it because it isn't a genuine emotion.
No.
And look at the woman in the middle trying to show that sort of sad and disbelief. I mean, she's the most fraudulent of the three.
She is. It's Francine Wheeler, and then we've got Green.
Unbelievable. So, unbelievable, Scott.
So
once you realize that it didn't happen, no children died, their performances are just stunning. It leaves you you're in disbelief.
Absolutely. And this guy, like I said, he's always looked fake to me. And I was looking at one of the other dead children's funerals. Okay. His name is James Mattioli. And,
yeah.
And I'm watching the funeral and I see this guy on the right here with the gray hair. And I'm like, that's Mr. Sherlock with a different costume on.
Unbelievable. You got a photo of him side by, yeah, the next one. There he is. I love it. Now, that one looks very much like, I think you're probably right about this one. Fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. And
I'm surprised he wasn't wearing the same tie.
Just, you know, so sloppy. And at this particular funeral, the child that is supposedly dead is actually alive, and he's there.
Mattioli, yeah. He was there at his own funeral, yes.
Yes.
He took a special interest in that. Sophia Smallstorm, I think, already spelled that out in Unraveling Sandy Hook in 2, 3, 4, and 5 Dimensions.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting when I was doing a lot of these things that I would research all these and find out something, and then I would come to find out somebody else already figured that out, you know?
Yeah, sure, of course. Well, you came late, but you did great. You came late. You were putting things together fast, Scott.
So now
you weren't wasting a lot of time. You are using your noggin.
And I will say also that the type of work I do allows me to have access to real records and information that other people would not have. So
excellent.
I'm able to track people and their associations to other people. And relatives. So, you know, when it changes last names, when people get married and things like that, I can still track all these people and put them together. So
wonderful.
Now, this just came out a couple days ago. You know, the young man, Jonathan Wright, who's been, he got arrested and
he's been stood up in court 20 times or something.
Oh, it's as horrific as my experience. Maybe it's worse. I don't know. He committed.
If it's real, I've been concerned whether this is a real deal or not.
What his?
The very prosecution. I mean, you fill us in. Look at the next slide, which I take it you're alluding to, which you haven't put up yet.
Well, Jonathan Wright. He's a nice young man, and he called Wayne Carver and wanted to ask him questions. And that's harassment. He shouldn't have done it.
Why? Wayne Carver's a public figure. He's been out front on this. He ought to be held to the bar. He ought to be required to answer any question whatsoever.
Well, he called him at his home, so he probably shouldn't have done that. But other than that, I don't think...
So you apologize. You say, gee, I'm sorry I called you at your home.
Well, I agree.
One phone call is not harassment, Scott. There needs to be a repeated pattern. And I take it there is not a repeated pattern here.
No, there's not. So
the whole charge is a fabrication. It's phony.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean,
they're trying to set an example of anyone who would ask any question of any authority in all of this.
Precisely. So anyway, I hope he gets his day at court. But anyway, he's the one who uncovered this thing I'm about to show you, which is a gun violence preventive manual that teaches, it's the propaganda gun manual that was put out and given to everyone prior to Sandy Hook.
through effective messaging.
Yes.
Do you know that when Eric Holder was interviewed on the eve of his retirement as the Attorney General, he was asked what was his greatest accomplishment, and instead of claiming whatever he'd done, he said his greatest failure, what he regretted the most, was not being able to do more with the Sandy Hook incident. See, he thought he was mastering effective messaging.
So I encourage anyone that wants to look at this, you can find it on my YouTube channel. I've got a link that will take you to another one of these hosting places, and you can listen to it.
Could you describe this as a manual for crisis actors who are opposed to guns?
It's more for the politicians on words not to use and how not to phrase things.
Really? They're actually managing their language.
Yes, absolutely. And what is even more interesting about this is that this is written by Rosa DeLauro's husband. And Rosa DeLauro is a state senator in Connecticut. This is written by her husband, who is Stanley Greenberg.
Greenberg of the Greenberg Crisis Actor family?
I don't know if he's actually part of the same family, but I would imagine so.
Let's put it this way. We would not be surprised.
Not at all. So Stanley Greenberg's firm was hired in 2011 to put this thing together. And so it's unbelievable when you read it. And this is the woman. You've probably seen her before. She's a lovely gal, isn't she? Rosa DeLauro.
Appalling.
Yes.
So maybe even Sandy Hook was her inspiration? For effective messaging?
You know, unfortunately.
Just say it's not inconceivable.
It's not inconceivable whatsoever. What I've found is that, you know, this is a democratic state and everybody here is in cahoots, and even people that do things wrong. For example, the state senator, Senator Crisco is his name, by the way. He was found guilty of forging checks for his campaign fund, and he was only fined $4,000. Now, you and I would go to jail if we forged checks, okay? That's a felony.
Yeah, that's outrageous. Chance, is my mic muted?
No, I can hear you loud and clear.
You can hear me fine, okay. Oh, it's his own. Yeah, go ahead.
So you know, here's this Crisco, and his nickname is Crisco the Forger. Just type that in there.
Right. That's real chummy, friendly. We have a whole family of crooks and criminals here in Connecticut.
It's unbelievable. And they all are connected. So, all right. So there's Rosa DeLauro. One guy commented, he said, oh, isn't that, she's a transvestite, right? No, I don't think so. Anyway. All right. Next picture. Oh, well, here's Joe Crisco watching Dan Malloy sign the bill for the new long gun bill here in Connecticut and the new mental health bill. And for those who may not be familiar with the exact verbiage of the bill, essentially, you can no longer buy assault weapons and ammunition. Also, what they've done is to take the guns away from anyone if there's a restraining order filed against anybody for any reason. And the way it works here in Connecticut is that you could make a false allegation against anybody and request that there be a restraining order placed on that person. And the hearings are not that formal, and most people don't even show up for these hearings. But in the meantime, within 24 hours of someone filing it, a police officer will come to your door and confiscate all your weapons and ammunition, at which point you'll never get it back if it's a long gun. You'll never get it back.
Scott, my understanding, I've been told that Dan Malloy is illiterate, literally, that he cannot read. Are you aware of that?
Well, I know he can't talk, so...
But are you aware that he's actually illiterate? Which makes me wonder about the school system. If he grew up in Connecticut, and if it's correct that he's illiterate, what in God's name is going on with him?
Well, I would like to think that we've got some fairly intelligent people in this state. There are plenty of good people as well. But I can't speak for his background. I don't really know. But the picture on the right side of this is, this is what is on Senator Crisco's desk. Okay. It's his little memorial for the Sandy Hook hoax. He's got the green bracelet that we see all
the Newtown 26.
Yep. That the whole, gun agenda people wearing. And, this picture might be that little girl that was the wrong girl. Remember that story?
Yeah.
That might be her. And then this little guy, Danny. Now, I don't know why he selected these three or whatever, but there is an autistic connection to all of this also. And there's several people involved. Joe Crisco had a grandson with autism, and apparently he's since passed away. At the School of Rock, there's a musician there in particular who is a phenomenal pianist, and he's very autistic.
My cat frequently is heard on the air, so he's here meowing right now, Scott. Go for it.
And apparently what I've been able to determine is that the young boy who's at the School of Rock, who's the pianist, his baby photograph has been used for Mr. Noah Impozner.
Really?
For that.
Oh, tell me more about that. Tell me more about that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, his purported father has been a fierce in attacking anyone who has been skeptical about Sandy Hook. He's been among the very worst.
Yeah, and quite frankly, I have not posted the photographs that would implicate him in all of this because I know that I'll end up getting a copyright strike on my YouTube channel. And so that's the only reason I haven't done that. And
but you're telling me the child who has been presented as Noah Posner actually was a student at the School of Rock.
Yes, that's one of the photographs. What I found is that with many of these people, they've used several children. So what I believe they did with Noah was to use his older brother's pictures when he was a child. And this other boy, his name is Ethan Walmark, from the School of Rock, because he's autistic, he'll never know, right? And so they've intermixed these photographs. And I believe they also used one of his other cousins from the West Coast and some younger pictures.
Wow.
So it gets very difficult. You know, we talked about facial recognition and these things.
Yeah.
At some point, you just have to realize that it's not so important to figure out all these details. You know, it's just because there's so many of them, you know, now that we have the smoking gun with your photograph of Wayne Carver being there before the incident, that's what we needed.
Yes.
These other little things, people would argue about, oh, well, that's not him or that.
Yes, yes.
But it doesn't really matter. All you need to know is that these kids in these pictures right here, they're not dead, okay? They're not dead at all. And
or if they are deceased, it had nothing to do with Sandy Hook.
Correct. Okay, so now an interesting thing was my next photograph I'm going to show is this. And on the right side it's blurry, I realize, but it's a banner that was hanging up in the gym. And I'm like, what the heck is that thing? And I figured it must be like their school logo or something, or
it looks semi-demonic.
It does. And so I published this on a YouTube video, and somebody brought to my attention that it looked very similar to the picture on the left, which happens to be the prison in Newtown from above using Google Earth. And I was like, you know what? You are absolutely correct.
Yeah, if it were rotated, you know, to be perpendicular, it needs to be rotated about 10 degrees to the right.
Yeah. So, and this is a state-of-the-art facility. And if you look, you'll see there's a helipad right there. So.
Yeah, sure. Lower right.
Yep. And now it's called, I think it's Gardner Institution, Correctional Institution. And as it turns out, the person who runs the correctional, the entire corrections department.
For the state of Connecticut.
Yeah.
Superintendent of Corrections.
Something like that. Yes, thank you. It turns out to be the brother of a gentleman that is in charge of the athletics at my son's high school. So all in the family here. You know.
That's a bit disturbing, given what happened to your son.
Exactly. And I volunteer at the prisons. I go and I speak to inmates about addiction issues and try to give them some hope. And, you know, every time I go in there, I wonder if they're going to, like, just lock the door on me. Yeah. Anyway, but nobody even realized that this prison was right in Newtown. And even people that were pretty well versed in the whole Sandy Hook thing and just things about Connecticut, they didn't know about it. So I don't. It's a maximum security prison.
A maximum security prison. Wow.
Yeah. And I've got some other questions about it. Let's just say that. Okay. And I'm not sure if it's really used for everything that we think. All right.
There's so much corruption in Connecticut. Almost anything is possible there.
Right. And, you know, recently there was drug dealing going on in Newtown with the police department. You know, they could be using this as a, you know, this is how they bring the drugs in. I don't know. Okay. So.
Here, community. Go ahead.
So now this was a memorial that was set up down there at Sandy Hook. And
no more weapons.
No more weapons.
Yeah, let the criminals dominate, because they'll have guns when they take them away from the law-abiding citizens. We won't be able to defend ourselves against marauders, gangs, exploitation. We won't have citizen soldiers. We couldn't have defeated the British at Lexington or Concord. Emperor Hirohito's highest-ranking military advisor told him they should not invade the United States, because there'd be a sniper behind every bush. Not if they take away all our weapons. Anyone can invade. We'll just put up a big sign, USA gun-free zone, Scott. The absurdity of this is beyond belief. Absurdity is beyond belief.
What's really, really interesting about this photograph is that if you read it, Jim, you want to read that first line to the viewers?
American School for the Deaf of West Hartford.
Above that.
Silence of sad victims, 26 surviving.
Yeah, what's that all about?
26 surviving. And they say, we are so saddest in prayers for the Sandy Hook Elementary School that left 26 people dead, 20 of them children. That day ends. Started crying. We love and support to keep safety, to help people and children process. This is beyond. It's weird. It's almost. It's incoherent.
Okay.
So, no more weapons, please. No sales. Right. Not even toy guns. It says.
Right.
These people are out of their minds. They're so detached from reality. Don't they understand they'd all be victims of criminals who aren't going to give up their guns?
Well, I posted this because my wife had gone down there to do Reiki. Do you know what Reiki is?
No, I'm not sure I do.
Well, it's I believe it's a Catholic type of spiritual healing that they do. And so she went down there. It's not like a massage exactly, but they lie down and they kind of work on your energy and stuff. And
oh, I see.
Light some candles and, you know.
Yes, yes, yes. Just feel all those bad feelings. Those bad vibes are leaving your body and the new power of love and health is entering.
So anyway, so she snapped this picture and it wasn't until April that she sent it to me and said, you know, hey, I never showed you this stuff, but I got a few pictures I snapped while I was down there. And, well, it turns out this had been published in some newspapers and so forth. But if you go back and look at it, there's a lot of other things that are creepy about it. And the first word is silence. Okay,
yeah.
That's spelt incorrectly.
Of course it is.
And somebody had called me right away and said, do you know who did this? And I said, no. And they showed me that it was the CIA. It was SAD.
Right. This is a fabrication. Yes.
Well,
it's part of effective messaging, Scott.
Well, they're playing games with us. You know, they're putting their little messages out there. SAD, Silence of SAD Victims. SAD is the Special Activities Division of the CIA.
Very good.
National
SAD is a division of the CIA. I love it.
So you've got American School for the Deaf of West Hartford, who ended up getting something like $5 million from all this. Why?
No doubt. No doubt. No doubt.
So they could, you know,
it was a big cash giveaway. You participate, you're going to be rewarded by the government.
We are so saddest, as in like sadist.
Yes. Yes.
And prayers for the Sandy Hook ELE. What does that mean?
Well, it's the elementary. It's hyphenated.
No.
Oh, ELE is in and of itself has a meaning.
Which is?
You remind me.
Extinction level event.
Ah, yes, of course. That's actually Fukushima, not Sandy Hook, but it's very damn interesting. They're using that play on letters.
Well, I'll tell you why I think that says that in a minute. That left 26 people dead, 20 of them children. That day and started crying, saw the rest. But they use another word there, solons. And, you know, you put these things into Google and you get responses that are demonic and very strange. And
really?
For those that don't know.
Instead of solace, it's solat.
Solange, yeah.
Not solace, S-O-L-A-C-E, but S-O-L-A-N-C-E.
Yeah. S-O-L-A-N-G-E, I believe it was.
Oh, it's a G. No, it's a little further over. Yeah, it's just your cursor's in the wrong way. You go the other way.
Oh, yeah, right there. S-O-L-A-N-C-E. You're right. So these really weird things like that. And I think even a list of children and people, there's something that's not right with that. But, again, you get to so many different – so there's so many things, so many anomalies, it just becomes ridiculous, you know. No more video fight games.
You know? Yeah, I know. Ridiculous.
So, all right. And so that was, you know, kind of weird. And then somebody in the upper left-hand corner here wrote their name. And I've been asking the people if they could figure out who it is. And I think it's actually Hillary.
The second word seems like Hillary, yes.
Sam Hillary, and I found that there is a Hillary in Newtown, last name Hillary.
Okay.
So I don't really know anything about them, but.
Okay.
So then there's this memorial, and this is a statue this is in front of the School for the Deaf, okay, in East Hartford. And it's a rather pedophile looking.
I think it is. That I'm just noticing that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's several aspects of it that could be interpreted as suggestively obscene.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, what I've learned about Newtown is that this place is it's creepy. They've got, they're one of two locations in the country for the Church of Satan.
Yeah, the headquarters for the Church of Satan, yes.
Yep. There's, you got the Freemason Lodge. And it's got a history of some crazy stuff. There was an abandoned house that was found to have, it was full of like 300 or 400 gallons of urine. And a lot of really weird, creepy things about this town. And so.
Okay, we have 25 minutes to go, Scott.
Okay. All right, so this, you know, this is the start of the pedophile portion of it, okay? Because this involves pedophilia.
All right.
All right, so now the Super Bowl kids. I told you that I was looking into those and all that. Well, that kid that Jennifer Hudson's, she's touching his chin. He actually he lives in my town right here, and I know him personally.
Really?
Yes. And I know the family, and so I was just in disbelief that they partook in this act of terrorism. I mean, if you think about it, they're aiding and abetting. This is child abuse. They're using the children as pawns. They're putting them out there in front of 110 million people, pretending to be the Sandy Hook chorus. The Super Bowl, the NFL, is complicit in this as well. They're covering up information. The Newtown School Board would not disclose who these children were. They claimed
how outrageous.
They claim not to have any knowledge of who these people were.
How could they even make the trip if you know they didn't have the approval of the school board, the parents, and all that?
Exactly.
I mean, schools are very strict about all these things. They keep copious documents and records.
Yeah, somebody said, he goes, my kid can't even, like, cross the street without getting a permission slip, you know? I mean, it's ridiculous. So to think that they would climb onto Air Force One and fly down to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, Air Force One compliments of Barack Hussein Obama.
That's correct.
Anyone who thinks Obama wasn't behind Eric Holder, behind setting this up with Dan Malloy, behind the state police, behind the school board of Newtown, behind all the participants, including the medical examiner, is just burying their head in the sand.
And do you remember when he came out and he spoke and he called Newtown Newton? Do you recall that?
I think I do.
I mean... If that wasn't staged, I don't know what is. I mean, he was trying to make it sound like he didn't really know anything about Newtown, okay? You know, by calling it Newton. I'm sure of it because
that's so obviously fake. Because I mean, you know, it's not a difficult name,
right?
It's not even as difficult as Massachusetts. Newtown is two simple words put together.
And then during the Freedom of Information Act hearings, when the final board was going to give their decision, the person that was running it this time, he called it Newton. And the guy, he lives in Connecticut, supposedly.
You're kidding me.
I'm like, you got to be kidding. I'm like, I said to Wolf, I said, you got to make them say Newtown. Like, this is unacceptable. I mean, anyway. So that's that. And all these kids, you know, have been matched up with the School of Rock. Not every one of them. There's a couple that actually do go to the Newtown schools, but most of them do not even reside in the town of Newtown. They're all over the state.
You've been tracking the participants in this.
Yes, I have all their names. I have their parents' names. I can tell you where they live.
Wonderful.
I can tell you what they eat for breakfast.
Wonderful.
Okay, so then you've got this guy, Lucas Martins. Now, on my videos, I explain who this kid is here. This is supposedly one of the dead kids.
Yeah.
And, but I tracked him and found out allegedly his real name is Lucas Martins, not, James, what's his last name?
Not Mayota.
Mattioli.
James Mattioli. Yeah, not Mattioli. He's supposed to be James Mattioli?
Yeah. So when you look at this photograph, you'll realize that this woman here is really Miss Soto. Okay?
Unbelievable.
And then this guy here, you'll probably agree that it's James or this kid older. Okay? And you'll realize that this girl here is probably this girl or this girl. This is all Photoshop. If you look at the length of this arm for this kid, it's so long, it's ridiculous. Oops.
Good work. Good work.
And if you look at the little hands and things, if you look at the hand here, okay?
Yeah, there's something odd about the relationship of his arm to her body.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is what the CIA has done all over the place.
Yeah.
They've used younger pictures of the older kids. Okay. So here's another example of that, too. And I've been told over and over again that this is all the same family that is behind this, the Greenbergs, okay? And I have found a lot of connections. It's not, you know, all people with the last name Greenberg, but people who are, you know, part of that have different married names.
What's the picture inserted in the middle?
This guy here?
Yeah.
Oh, I found him. He was also at the funeral for.
Yeah, I mean, you added him to that. I mean, that was a.
Yeah, I did. But what's interesting is that this is Carly Soto right here. Okay. Remember her? Miss Soto's sister. Okay. She's very active with the gun control, speaking, traveling, all that. Well, when I started looking at this, I realized that here again, they've used the younger photographs when they were children down here. And this girl here is actually this girl here.
Yeah.
This
fascinating.
Girl here is this girl here.
Fascinating.
This girl here, all grown up, is here.
That wow.
That is Miss Soto.
Wow.
You know, little hand here.
Wow.
All Photoshopped.
Scott, this is fantastic. Love it. Fascinating.
All right. So it's just like the CIA. Like you would go down these rabbit holes and end up and find this kind of stuff, you know, and it's just like whatever. Okay. So well, this is Josephine Gay. And what I've learned is that this girl here, her real name is Melissa Wasserman Catalano. And Wasserman is a political name.
Yeah, of course. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the head of the Democratic National Committee, for whom I have in the past had respect, which I believe is going to take a heavy hit here.
I'm afraid it's going to. I went back to the School of Rock, and I went inside, and I was photographing the inside. There were names listed all on the walls of the kids that were signing up for different events they wanted to participate in. And in walks Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
And she walked in while you were there.
While I was there.
Wow.
And she went into the basement. We said hello. And she went in the basement. And I mean, I was like, I was nervous to begin with, as you might imagine, because I figured out what was going on at this place.
Yeah.
And so then I looked up Wasserman, and I found out that in Connecticut, we had a 9-time House of Representative called Julia Wasserman. Guess what town she's from?
Newtown.
Bingo. Well, she just passed away, and but she was very popular in town, and there's a baseball field, there's a park, there's even a road named after her.
Wasserman Way.
All in Newtown. Now, while I was inside the School of Rock, and I saw all these different names, one of them was Sloshbird. And, oh, what do you know? She happens to, his mom happens to be a state senator. There were also two people with the last name Kehoe. Well, that's a familiar last name, isn't it?
Yeah, chief of police.
So I believe that that's his grandchildren. Or it could be nieces and nephews. I don't really know. But, again.
I wonder if they had to talk him into participating in the Newtown hoax.
I don't know.
He seemed embarrassed.
Pardon?
He seemed embarrassed at the FOIA hearing. He didn't want to be there.
Yep.
So but he would have been a key guy because he was a chief of police. He had to be involved. If they're going to fake stuff like this, you're going to have the law enforcement authorities on your your side.
Oh, yeah. So then we had a... let's see, another police detective from Newtown. His children go there. And turns out Debbie Wasserman Schultz, her father lives in the next town over, which I found to be interesting. And so the three schools of rock, the Fairfield, the New Canaan, and the New Bedford locations were all owned by a person by the name of, I think it's Michael Catalano. And he no longer owns them. And now there's a new guy there, and his name is Francisco. And he's got a record. And somebody who is a Department of Children and Family Services representative from another state looked into him and found that there's an open case regarding sexual allegations against him. And he should be nowhere near children, and yet he's running the school.
These are pedophilia allegations?
Jim, I'm of the belief that this is one of the hubs of a pedophilia ring. This is how they compromise people, politicians. If you think about it, they have these little rock stars that want to go to Hollywood, and they'll do just about anything to get there. And I believe that they are trained, primed.
So a school of rock may actually be a cover for a pedophile ring.
Absolutely. And Fairfield is well known for having pedophilia problems with the Catholic priests.
This is nauseating me, Scott.
I'm sorry.
No, I mean, I'm telling you, we have to face the truth. I'm all for the truth. It's just sometimes the truth is nauseating.
It is absolutely horrific. And, you know, this is child abuse at every level. And not only sexual, but the children that they've used to participate in the hoax, they have to live with this secret that they participated in this lie. And they're not old enough to make the decision whether or not they want to participate in something like that. Okay, that's abuse. Okay, but now the sexual abuse piece of this. I got a phone call from a police detective in Fairfield, telling me to take down one of my videos, because what I had found was that Dan Malloy had flown to China prior to Sandy Hook. And I'm like, why is our governor going to China? What does he need to do over there? We never really got a straight answer from the guy. Well, I found out that he went over there to recruit a events coordinator who happens to have a daughter who is a very good singer. And they moved from China to Fairfield, and I believe she is the woman who coordinated the entire Sandy Hook event.
Really? And, really? Oh,
and I was publicly stating her name before. I've been warned by the Fairfield police to take that down and not to discuss it on social media, or I will be arrested.
What's the basis for them in the law for them to be instructing you to take it down?
There is none. So
this is an outrageous violation of First Amendment. You're doing research on a matter of enormous public significance.
I've had three police cars show up at my office. Three police cars come to my home. They call my wife on her cell phone.
What's going to happen after this, Scott, having come on the air with me? Are they going to harass you even more?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. And you know what? I'm all about the truth. I'm doing what's right.
Yes.
I believe that this is so important, okay, that the public needs to know what's going on, or we're doing. We are doomed.
Yes.
It's so out of control.
Yes.
Just
Up to the President of the United States.
Oh, yes.
Right up to the President of the United States.
All of them. Yep. I mean, Blumenthal, everybody. It's corrupt. They're not even the ones calling the shots. You know, it's sickening, absolutely sickening. And to think that during 9/11 that they would blow up our buildings,
yes,
with our citizens in it,
yes,
unthinkable. Now,
yes,
did you happen to hear today that there's a new whistleblower that came forward today?
Tell me.
He's a U.S. intelligence officer. He's gone on the record stating that every single terror attack in the United States was a false flag attack.
Actually, that came up about 2 months ago. I've reported it on False Flag Weekly News. Yes.
Okay. David Steele.
Yes.
20-year Marine.
I've got a story on him. Yeah, absolutely right.
Okay. So he's a former CIA clandestine case officer.
Yes.
You know,
I'm glad you bring him up, though, because it fits this context so very, very well.
Yeah, I mean, for someone like that to come forward and say that all these things that have happened are false flags.
Yes.
I mean, for him to stick his neck out, I mean, if he doesn't get offed, you know, I mean, I don't know. So, you know, your question about me and the harassment, and that's, I've already filed complaints to the police department in Fairfield and to Madison.
They've been harassed for harassment.
They've been investigating me and doing things off the record.
Yes.
There's no records whatsoever when I did a FOIA.
They don't like truth tellers in Connecticut, Scott. It's very hazardous to speak the truth in Connecticut.
Absolutely.
What a disgrace. What a national disgrace. You got a whole state embarrassing, shaming the United States of America from the governor on down.
And we're the Constitution state? Come on.
Give us a break. What a hypocrisy. What a betrayal.
These
are traitors to the United States.
Several people have asked me, well, how do you get an entire town to keep quiet? How do you do that? You know, how could they possibly pull that off? And I always thought in the beginning that it was that they gave people their mortgages, they paid them off.
Right, 2009, Christmas Eve,
right.
All those homes for free.
Which was 6 days before the incident that my son got in trouble with. And so it just goes to show you that they were acting very strange back then. And
yes.
This is what they were in preparation for. There was also a woman in my town who was murdered. And I believe that had something to do with this, too.
What was her name?
Her name is Barbara Hamburg, and she was involved in this gifting club for women. And
was she involved in real estate?
No, it was like a women's group. They had these parties, and it was like a mini pyramid scheme.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
And, you know, whether it's right or wrong, I don't know. But anyway, she hired the Marcus Law Firm, Edward Marcus. Well, he was the head of the Democratic Party in Connecticut for a long, long time.
All right. What did she hire him for?
For advice as to whether or not the gifting club was legal. And because the IRS was questioning them. And they advised that it probably was legal. And also his daughter, Shelley Marcus, was about to become a superior court judge appointed by Dan Malloy. And suddenly this woman turns up dead.
You know, if Dan Malloy can't read, how does he know what legislation he's signing when he signs bills passed by the state legislature? This is absurd to have an illiterate governor. I mean, several people have told me this to be the case.
I don't doubt it. You know, again, a lot of these people are just puppets. They're just doing what they're told. And so the whole thing is very, very disturbing, Jim. You know, I was raised by a good, honest family. My dad is an IBMer, and you know, we didn't swear at home. We, you know, we didn't lie. You know, we just didn't behave like that at all. So this has been a complete shock to me, and I cannot believe that these people are the people that we're supposed to trust, and you know, that we rely on to protect us and to make our laws and do the things that an upstanding citizen, you know, would do. And these people are doing things that are just unthinkable.
Well, tell all those people who are opposed to guns, put a sign out in front of your house that says gun-free zone. So everyone, every killer, every murderer, every rapist, every kidnapper will know that whatever happens, he'll be armed and you won't. Put a sign out there. I want a sign in front of every one of your homes. Gun-free zone. Do it. If you believe it, do it. Put a sign in front of your home. Gun-free zone. Put it out there. Do it now. Don't resist. Don't hesitate.
I ran into a New Haven police officer, and we were just chatting, and I said, you know, I know that you know, you must know about Sandy Hook and everything. And I was concerned. I'm like, you know, is it safe to stay here? Should I leave the country? You know, what's the deal? And, so he ended up telling me that he was down in New Orleans during Hurricane Katrina. And he goes, I got shot 3 times. He said, you wouldn't believe what we did down there. Okay. And what he was saying to me was, If you had a gun, it just came in and shot you. And like there was a guy, he had a sign up out at the end of his driveway that said, fully armed, weapons, keep out, you know, whatever. Well, that was like a red flag to go in and kill him.
That's so disgusting, Scott.
Yeah, I'm just telling you what he told me, you know.
Can we get to the last slide, by the way? I just don't want time to go by without our having hit there. I don't think we got there. Did we get there?
I think we did. And,
Oh, that was Wasserman Way?
Yeah.
I'm very troubled. Go to that 41. I'm very troubled that Debbie Wasserman Schultz could have been involved in this. That's to me unbelievably disgusting if that is true.
Yeah. I suppose I have to say, you know, I'm 99% sure of that. Okay.
Scott, I'm not going to put any words in your mouth. I know you can only report your personal experiences and what inferences you've drawn from them. I'm just saying the very idea to me is profoundly disturbing.
Yeah. And, you know, she was appointed by Obama. She's the Democratic House Speaker.
No, she's the National Committee Chairman.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes.
Chairman of the Democratic National Committee. Yeah. Do you know her attitude about guns?
She hates them.
Is she an anti-gun zealot?
Yep.
She is.
Oh, yeah.
And Obama has shown he is, and we even have footage from 1995 when Eric Holder was addressing the National Women's Democratic conference in Washington, D.C., and he was talking about the necessity to, this was his word, brainwash the American people to change their attitude toward gun. I think Sandy Hook was his big effort to brainwash the American people. So he was asked what was his greatest accomplishment. He realized he'd fallen short because he didn't do enough with the Sandy Hook incident. Can you imagine if he didn't know, you know, he knew, of course, it wasn't a real school massacre. So he uses the word incident? What a fraud. What a fraud. These people are despicable, Scott. You got it right. This was an act. It was a feigned act of violence, but it was presented as real to instill fear into the American people in order to manipulate us to promote the Obama holder political agenda. And that's a classic definition of terrorism, Scott, so you got it right. This was Barack Obama, Eric Holder, Dan Malloy, Lieutenant Paul Vance, Wayne Carver, and a host of other supporting actors perpetrating an act of terrorism on the American people. This is as disgusting as it gets.
And all these senators, and I didn't even tell you about the assistant district attorney who I used to play golf with.
Tell me.
He's involved in it. And one of his brother turns up as a shill on my YouTube channel. And I call him out on it.
He turns up as a what?
Shill.
As a shill? You mean he's on your YouTube channel attacking you?
Yeah, yeah.
And it turned out you used to play golf with this guy and his brother's a shill?
Yeah.
Unbelievable, Scott.
It's all in the family, you know. And
all in the family. Connecticut, one big mafia-style family. It's a crime syndicate masquerading as an administration.
And his wife is the president of Webster Bank. So it just...
Scott, this is all unbelievably appalling. I just can't thank you enough for coming on, Scott. This has shed light on a whole lot of dark corners of Sandy Hook, of which I was previously unaware. I'm very much in your debt.
Well, thank you for having me on, and I really appreciate having the opportunity to vocalize these things because, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people don't want to know. You know, they suffer from cognitive dissonance, and they just get too uncomfortable when they know the truth about some of these things, and they have this normalcy bias that they want to live by, and so it's a very difficult subject to talk about with other people. And it's nice to meet like-minded people like yourself, you know, who are good, honest citizens who, you know, you're trying to, you know, spread the truth, and you've written a great book, and I encourage everyone to buy it. Where can I get it, by the way?
Amazon.com.
And it's called what?
Nobody Died at Sandy Hook.
Great. Okay. And, so anyway, I appreciate
it. Well, the American people are entitled to know the truth about their own history, and if the government is lying to them, cheating, deceiving them, they deserve to know. Scott, I can't thank you enough. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Real Deal, expressing my appreciation to Scott Wilson for being here and all of you for watching this show.
Thank you, Jim.